Screen Time with John Fardy.
Thanks to Airtainment, a new era in Irish streaming begins. Discover more at airtainment.com.
This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Screen Time. I'm John Fardy and this is News Talk's TV and movie show. This week on the show, the great Kerry Washington and Tyler Perry talk about their new Netflix movie, The 6888, all about a group of African-American women in World War II who got the post moving again and changed the course of the war. I talked to the great director Barry Jenkins about taking over Lion King with the release of Mufasa the Lion King and how there's actually similarities between it and his Oscar-winning Moonlight. Chris Wasser reviews the week's other new movie releases, including Robbie Williams as a chimpanzee in Better Man. Plus, your chance to win tickets to the premiere, the Irish premiere of Jesse Eisenberg's new hotly Oscar-tipped movie, A Real Pain. I'm open on Twitter, John_Fardy, or you can email me screentime@newstalk.com. This show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud or wherever you get your podcasts. And it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on Newstalk. Good weekend to you all. I hope you're doing well. And you're all set for the Christmas, as they used to say in Blanchardstown, where I grew up, around this time of year. Am I all set for the Christmas? Not really sure. We had a bit of a curveball on Sunday evening last when we had to take our small youngest son, who's 6, to A&E with a really bad case of the flu. He's fine, but he was just wiped out. And, you know, pediatric ward 2 Sundays before Christmas is not somewhere you want to be. That said, I've no skin in the game here, but the pleasantness of the doctors we encountered in Lourdes General Hospital in Drogheda were unbelievable. They were just so patient, nice, despite being in a very busy pediatric A&E ward that looked like the fall of Saigon. They could not, you know, grace under pressure is what I would say. So my thanks to them and a shout out to all the people working over Christmas in the health service. It's like a hidden world you don't really think about, or I certainly don't think about, until you're in it. So kudos to you. Big news this week for Irish cinema with the news that Kneecap was rightly nominated for Best International Feature Film for this year's Oscars. So it's a great watch. It really entertaining, satirical, maybe not entirely satirical. It is a great watch. It's, you know, in the vein of, I don't know, something like the Full Monty or The Commitments with a bit more, you know, political stuff going on. But it is a great, entertaining watch with the strangest cameo I've ever seen with Jerry Adams. It's also nominated for Best Original Song as well. So a good week for Irish cinema. It's been a good few years for Irish cinema and indeed Irish language cinema. So if you're looking to catch up on stuff over Christmas, Kneecap would be a good use of your time. Now in TV this week, I was watching this.
She's been feeding us government secrets for 10 years now, and I don't need to tell you how lucrative that's been for us. If her husband finds out that she's A, a spy, B, an adulteress, or C, God forbid, both, then we're screwed and she's out, and I don't even know what happens then. I want you to find out if there's someone after her, and if there is, I want you to remove them as a threat.
You want me to hunt assassins for you?
Well, you've hunted everyone else. It's delicate, this situation, Sam. She's delicate, so I need someone I can trust. And more importantly, I need someone she can trust. And I do believe you owe her. Right then. Good.
This man she had an affair with, did she say why she got involved?
Yes. She said it was love.
That is a clip from, I think, the much talked about Black Doves, Netflix's Christmas series, or the series they're possibly banking on to be a big hit at Christmas. It was released last week. There you heard Sarah Lancashire from Happy Valley and Ben Whishaw. Sarah Lancashire is in charge of the Black Doves. Ben Whishaw is a trigger man involved with the Black Doves. Who are the Black Doves? They're a group of, you could call them spies, but they're working for money as part of this Black Doves organization, selling secrets, espionage, spies. And the rub here is Keira Knightley is one of the Black Doves, but she's also in a massive cover-up of sorts, married to the British Defence Secretary. Her lover, not the British Defence Secretary, but a man she's having an affair with, dies. seemingly possibly related to the Black Doves and or the Chinese ambassador, all hell breaks loose. This is high octane, kind of daft, brilliant entertainment. Keira Knightley is on superb form, as is Ben Whishaw, if you can park the fact that every time you hear him talk, he sounds like Paddington Bear, because he is Paddington. But that aside, it's really, really entertaining. Daft, but relentlessly over-the-top action espionage thriller. Really, really good. Six parts, very watchable for a cold, dark winter's evening in the run-up or even over Christmas. It's set at Christmas, but it's not really about Christmas at all. That's just kind of tagged on the way Die Hard tags on its Christmas motif, I would suggest. But it's very, very watchable. Now, we have a competition this week on the show. Five lucky listeners have the chance to attend the Irish premiere of Searchlight Pictures, A Real Pain, on Tuesday, the 7th of January at the Lighthouse Cinema in Smithfield. And in case your geography isn't so good, that's in Dublin. And I say that somewhat condescendingly, because please don't enter if you can't attend the Lighthouse in Smithfield in Dublin on the 7th of January. A Real Pain is a great movie. There's a bit of Oscar buzz about it. It follows mismatched cousins, David, played by the brilliant Jesse Eisenberg, and Benji, played by the brilliant Kieran Culkin, as they reunite for a tour through Poland to honour their beloved grandmother. And there's a whole Holocaust thing going on there. But the adventure takes a turn when the odd couple's old tensions resurface against the backdrop of this family history. It's really good. I've seen it. I spoke to Jesse Eisenberg. I'll be bringing you that interview in early January. It's a really good watch. It is in cinemas from the 8th of January. You could attend the screening, the premiere screening, on the 7th of January, the evening before. We have five pairs of tickets to give away to it, with thanks to Searchlight Pictures. So if you would like to go to that Real Pain, all you have to do is answer this really easy question, which is, in which movie did Jesse Eisenberg previously star all about Facebook? Was it A, The Social Network, or B, Star Trek? If you know the answer to that incredibly difficult question, text the word movie, followed by your answer, and then your name to 53106. That's 53106, and texts cost 30 cents. Now, there is a great movie landing on Netflix. Well, it landed on Friday, the 20th of January, called The 6888.
Adams, you and the 6AAA Battalion are headed to Europe.
Should you open it? The Postal Battalion? They think the only thing we good for is to deliver some damn mail.
Would you like to see all the hangars, ma'am?
How many are there?
All of them.
Oh, my God.
Ladies, we have been ordered to provide hope. The soldiers have not heard from their loved ones, and their loved ones have not heard from them. When there is no mail, there is low morale.
6AAA Battalion!
Yes, a clip there from The 6888, which is inspired by the first and only Women's Army Corps unit of colour to serve overseas in World War II. Now, despite facing racism and sexism and grueling work conditions, they were committed to serving their country with honour and distinction. And they were given a very unusual mission that seemed strange at the time. They were tasked with sorting out the post, as in the post that wasn't being delivered to soldiers on the front. And by golly, did they attempt to do that. The film stars Kerry Washington as the lady in charge of all this. And these are all real life characters. Major Charity Adams. She was the commanding officer of the 6888. As I say, it stars the great Kerry Washington. I suppose for most people, she came to prominence in Scandal, and she was a big hit, Emmy-winning hit in that. She was in Little Fires Everywhere, and she's been in movies, Django Unchained. She's one of those people I don't think needs a huge introduction. A brilliant actress is Kerry Washington. Now, the 6888 was written and directed by Tyler Perry, who is one of the most influential movie makers and, I suppose, entertainment impresarios, more well known on the other side of the pond, so to speak. He's made over 20 movies, and he came up with this character, Medea. He's best known for that, his signature character, an African-American mother. The first movie was Diary of a Mad Black Woman, and he has made lots of movies about that character. He's also acted in things. He's written plays. You would have seen him in Star Trek and Don't Look Up. He's created this whole movie house in America. He's, you know, regularly listed as one of the most influential people in cinema in the world today. Not as well known on this side of the pond, but a big deal. And he wrote a great movie and directed it called The 6888. So here is my interview with Tyler Perry and Kerry Washington from earlier in the week. Hi, guys.
Hi, John.
Hi.
Greetings from Dublin and Ireland. Congratulations on the movie.
Thank you.
Tyler, if I can start with you, I was watching this last night going, this can't be real. And I had to go away and check all this, you know, this group of black women in the 40s tasked with sorting out the war postal system that I ran away to check. I wonder, not to put words in your mouth, but did you have a similar reaction when you heard about it and thought, God, there must be a film or something in this?
Absolutely, yeah. When I first saw the sizzle reel that Nicole Avant, Ambassador Nicole Avant, sent to me, I thought, you're kidding me, this can't be real. There could not have been 855 black women and women of color in World War II in Europe, and I not know it, especially because I'm a history buff, especially of black history. It was fascinating to me to find out, and I was embarrassed and also humbled that I was going to have the opportunity to tell this story.
Yeah, well, you told it very well. Kerry, your character, Charity, she's really tough, mm-hmm. and yet she's really solid, and she's such a good egg. And not to use another movie reference, and without giving a spoiler, there's a lovely Dead Poets Society moment in it, if that's my background. But how do you see her? Because to me, she's almost like entirely a decent human being.
It's funny, the people who, when you talk to the women who worked alongside her and for her and other people in her life who knew her, people speak to her about her in those terms, that she was so tough and stern and had very high expectations of the people around her, but also they trusted her and they loved her because she led with a lot of love and grace and compassion. And I think those are such admirable qualities in a leader. I feel like I learned a lot playing her about what good leadership looks like. And she was only 26 years old at the time.
Incredible.
Can you imagine being in charge of 855 women when you're 26 years old?
Yeah. I was still being tucked in by my mother at that age. But anyway, no, yeah, it's incredible. Sorry, making jokes. This is very serious. Tyler, I've heard you describe, I think, or maybe I'm dreaming this, but something along the lines of Oprah Winfrey was your North Star when you were growing up. And I know you've subsequently become friends with her all. But it must be a trip to then put her in a movie.
Oh, yeah, of course. to have this woman who I long admired and grew up, you know, just completely just floored by who she was and what she represented, to actually become friends with her was one thing, but then to actually have her come to work in this movie or say yes, out of 28 movies, this is the one I felt comfortable sending to her saying, what do you think of this character, Mary McLeod Bethune? And she goes, yes, I'd like to do it. I was really, really honored.
Yeah. And Tyler, you mentioned the 26 movies and all that. I don't think on this side of
28.
The ocean, 28, sorry. I didn't do enough research. I don't think people are as aware of you as they are in North America, but that's changing. But I wonder, like when I was reading about you, there's all these, the most influential, you know, top 10, all this money, all this success at box office and stuff like that. Does that distract you ever when you sit down to like do a movie like this? That there's so much noise about where you are in the Hollywood pantheon?
No, because I tell you, the gift that I've been given is to be outside of that system and not even live in that world, not even live in the town. So being outside of it allows me to have the clarity and the quiet of the real thoughts of real people. You know, it's nothing like walking down the street and having a person walk up to you and say, hey, I saw that last movie, you could do better. You know, or someone say, oh, the movie you did was phenomenal, it really touched me. So I love to have that in my ear and that realness of people. So no, I don't enter any project thinking about anything other than the story that I want to tell and do an honor to it.
But I do want to say, I think it's important on that people on this side of the pond understand that Tyler doesn't just, he's not just a prolific filmmaker, that he is, but that he's also created this whole studio in Atlanta, Georgia, outside of Hollywood. And that what he's really done is not just create success for himself, but he's built an ecosystem where millions of people are able to pursue their own success and excellence because he's given us the platform and the environment where that's possible.
Here, here. Kerry, just in closing, you know, it seems a shame that I would, with all these great credits you have, that I would end by talking about something so facile as your first name. However,
I am named after County Kerry in Ireland.
I know that, but I wanted to chat, and I'm delighted that you are a girl from New York, more of it. But have you actually ever been to Kerry?
No, and it's long overdue. I really need to get there. Everyone says it is so, so beautiful.
Yeah. Well, listen, you're talking to me from Dublin, so I can vouch for it as well, though. In the meantime, though, we will tell people that you should come to Kerry and people should watch your new movie. So lovely to talk to you guys.
Thank you
very much. Thank you.
Kerry Washington there, promising to make her, well, she didn't quite promise. She'd love to make her way to Kerry, where she is named after, and also Tyler Perry there, writer and director. They were both, and he's a playwright and an actor and all sorts of things, but he wrote and directed The 6888, and Kerry Washington stars in it as the lady in charge of that army unit. And The 6888 is on Netflix as of Friday, the 20th of December. Well worth a watch. Up next, the great Barry Jenkins on taking over The Lion King. Now you're welcome back to Screen Time News Talks TV and Movie Show. Now take a listen to this.
Rafiki, who are the outsiders?
Well, the outsiders come from many tribes, but when they are born, they are hated because they are different from their tribe.
Like you and your tribe?
Yes, just like me.
But, Rafiki?
Yes?
Why do they want to hurt everybody?
Sometimes when the people most like you don't love you, it is a hurt that can cause the greatest pain. And this pain can lead you to hate everything.
I'm glad that didn't happen to you, Rafiki.
Yes, my child. I'm glad too.
Hi, we're here too.
Yeah, why are you leaving us outside this story when I'm pretty sure we are the ultimate outsiders? Come on.
Yeah, we've always been misunderstood. I contain multitudes.
That was a clip from Mufasa, The Lion King. This is a prequel to the 2019 Lion King remake. It explores the origins of Mufasa, the noble lion whose legacy shaped the Pride Lands. Exploring the unlikely rise of the beloved king of the Pride Lands, the movie enlists Rafiki to relay the legend of Mufasa to young lion cub Kira, daughter of Simba and Nala, with Timon and Pumbaa lending their signature shtick. Told in flashbacks, the story introduces Mufasa as an orphan cub lost and alone until he meets a sympathetic lion named Taka, the heir to a royal bloodline. The chance meeting sets in motion an expansive journey of an extraordinary group of misfits searching for their destiny. Their bonds will be tested as they work together against, as is always the case in a Lion King movie, a deadly foe. Now, this is what they call photorealistic animation. It's CGI, but it's live action, if you know what I mean. So they are not real lions. What's, I suppose, so interesting about this is that it was directed by Barry Jenkins, the man who directed If Beale Street Could Talk and one of the best movies of recent years, Moonlight. He also gave us The Underground Railroad, that TV show from 2 years ago. A brilliant auteur of sorts. So it seemed, I suppose, a little incongruous that he was going to make a Lion King movie with kind of CGI and stuff. But it turns out he didn't think it was that too big a leap, as you'll hear me discuss with him in my interview with him. So this is Barry Jenkins talking to me earlier in the week about Lion King and a bit more besides. Tell me this, and forgive me if you've been asked this all day long, but you know, If Beale Street Could Talk, Moonlight, the movies I know and adore, and then I hear you doing Mufasa, the Lion King, and you think, really, the guy from Moonlight? But I guess part of it must be defying expectations. Or what was your way into this that you thought, yeah, I'll do that?
Yeah, but wasn't defined expectations, because I don't really have expectations of myself, and you know, I have to make these choices. But when I originally read the script by Jeff Nathanson, I was quite moved by it. And look, Moonlight and all these other films of Bill Street could talk, these very serious dramas, but no one's a child, you know, watching these serious dramas or thinking of writing these serious dramas. You're watching things like The Lion King, you know, or Die Hard or Toy Story, any of these other things. And so when I read the script, I already had a connection to these characters, and I was really inspired by the things that Jeff Nathanson, you know, had done to add this very rich bedrock complexity to to this story. And look, if I said to you, I'm making a film, it's about a child who finds themselves in this almost biblical event, you know, surrounded by water. And then after that event, they're separated from their parent figure and was going to try to find themselves. I could be talking about Moonlight, or I could be talking about Mufasa. And as a filmmaker, I've always been curious about the tools of filmmaking. And there's never been, at any point in cinema history, more ways to make a film. And I thought it would be really interesting to make a film with this tool set.
Yeah, which we were doing for the first time. And I suppose when you put it like that as well, I was just thinking about, like you're saying, it's an elemental story, but The Lion King as well is, you know, it's become like Darth Vader, or, you know, it's a huge totem pole now in our collective consciousness. Tell me this, Lin-Manuel Miranda, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, you're going to do a boxing match, you want Sugar Ray Leonard to be there or something. Did you always want him involved, or was it a happy accident, or...?
You know, it was a happy accident, you know, I'll say, you know, when we began the process, Lin was very busy. He was tied up. He was making his directorial debut with Tick, Tick, Boom. And he was also finishing Encanto. And so he was like super busy. So he wasn't available. And we just began making the film. And then when he became available, you know, he was the number one choice for sure. I've never made a musical. Like you said, you're going to go into this and there's a spot for another fighter on the team. Yeah, you want Sugar Ray Leonard. And so, you know, I watched interviews with him. I had almost worked with him on a Bill Street Could Talk, actually. He was almost cast in that film. And so I knew he was a very earnest, very passionate about his work. And I wanted someone who would bring that earnestness to the music in this film.
Yeah. Well, he does a great job in it. And, you know, I don't want to give any spoilers. There's a beautiful tribute to James Earl Jones. And I mentioned Darth Vader, and that must have been subconscious, because I wasn't planning that. But I wonder, I don't know the timeline, but I presume a sadness must have descended when you heard of his passing with the team involved in this movie.
Yeah, it definitely did. And then you couldn't work on the film without thinking of him.
Yeah.
Watch the film without thinking of him, and it was very clear that if you were sitting in an auditorium watching this movie, you wouldn't be able to watch it without thinking of him. And so it felt like we should acknowledge that thought at the very beginning. We should acknowledge that feeling at the very beginning of the film. It felt like the honorable thing to do. And look, there's a history here. If you go back to the release of the original Lion King, it also opened with a dedication to one of the originators of that piece. And so again, we're living in the legacy of the original Lion King, and it felt like absolutely the appropriate thing to do. I find it to be quite moving, and I hope that audiences will find it to be quite moving as well.
Absolutely. Tell me this, you know, I mentioned the M word, Moonlight, and you're probably tired of people like me bringing this up to you. It's been a long time now, but I'll tell you one thing. We don't do it as much anymore because we've spoken to everyone in Ireland, but we do a slot where people, well-known people in Ireland, pick their favorite movie. And Moonlight often gets picked, you'd be pleased to hear. And I'm wondering... I'm wondering why you think it might have continued to have such a life. And my theory has something to do with, but you tell me, you made the thing, but fathers and sons. And I don't want to suggest modern man is in crisis or anything like that, but men need stories about masculinity, I think, maybe more than ever. But you tell me.
Yeah, I don't know if it's about fathers and sons or masculinity, because I've met quite a few women who also...
And women have chosen it as their favorite movie as well, I should say. Sorry.
Exactly. So I don't know if it's that, but and it's interesting. I was talking to a friend of mine who said they had watched Moonlight recently, and that the reason why they felt that movie endured and why they felt it was their favorite, you know, amongst my work, was because of how pure the movie is and its feeling. And it's interesting, we're talking about Mufasa, so I'll situate this in the context of the Lion King.
Yeah, sure.
I think the reason why the original Lion King is so enduring is because in the center of that film, you have this moment where a child walks up to their parent, you know, that has passed, that has been killed by another family member. And for the first time, audiences watching that movie, whether you're 4 years old or 104 years old, they are processing what it might be like to lose a parent. The complexity.
Yeah. Children. The great fear of so many people, yeah.
Exactly. And it's such an honest emotion, such an honest depiction of loss, of grief, of trauma, and this really big family entertainment. I think that's why that story of the Lion King endures. Mm-hmm. It's just a clarity of intent, clarity of purpose, honesty of emotion. I think in Moonlight, not that I was thinking of the Lion King, of course, but I think there's so many passages in that film where, and it's hard for me to talk about it because I created it, where the same thing is happening, possibly, and now I'll really bring this home. You know, we had nothing making that film. You know, it's a budget of 1.5 million US. So what do we have? Clarity of intent, clarity of purpose, and honesty, you know, in our depiction of these emotions. We try to do that with everything we do, whether it's the scale of Moonlight or the scale of Mufasa the Lion King. But I will say in that original film, in the middle of that movie, you have this extended sequence where the emotions are just as clear as any movie that wins a major film festival or that we consider these very, very five-star dramas. Here it is in a family entertainment. You've got something so pure. I think it's why that film endures, and hopefully I think it's why Moonlight endures as well. Freudian slip there is why Moonlight endures as well.
Listen, I could talk to you all day, but there are people queuing up to speak to you. It's lovely to talk to you, though, and continued success.
Lovely to talk to you, too. One of the most important people in my creative life is my strategist, Paula Woods. She's your countrywoman. So it's really cool. It's really cool to hear your accent because I hear it every day, all day.
Oh, great. We're all over the place. We're infiltrating the world, us Irish.
Oh, trust me. I know.
Barry Jenkins there. Delighted to hear my Irish brogue, it would seem. He was talking to me about Mufasa the Lion King, which is now in cinemas as of Friday, the 20th of January. Maybe it was actually earlier in the week, but it is in cinemas now as we speak. Barry Jenkins was talking to me there. He is the director of it, and he did a pretty good job too. Up next, the week's other new movie releases, where Robbie Williams is played, yes, by a chimp. Now, you're welcome back to Screen Time. We've been talking about some movies. Let's get to some other ones, because the big new, well, is it the biggest new release? It's a fascinating new release. Robbie Williams, a biopic, but it's a chimp. Yes, that's what it is. It's called Better Man. We're also going to be talking about an interesting looking movie on Amazon Prime, or Prime Video, as they like us to call it now, with Bobby Cannavale and Robert De Niro, about a stand-up comedian dealing with his neurodiverse son. To make sense of the chimps and the comedians, there's only one man who can do it full of festive cheer, the one and only Chris Wasser. Chris, hello.
John, hello. Thank you for that intro.
Not at all. I've been working on that all week. I've had nothing else on, so I've been able to, you know, really do it. So listen, I haven't seen it, but by God, do I want to see it. Robbie Williams, it's a biopic, but instead of Robbie Williams, the actor or the human being, we have a CGI'd chimpanzee.
We do, and it sounds like a terrible joke. I mean, when I first heard about this thing, you know, a Robbie Williams biopic from the director of The Greatest Showman, which I did not love. And instead of an actor playing Robbie Williams, or Robbie Williams playing himself or whatever, we're going to have a chap named John O'Davies play, in a motion capture performance, a chimpanzee version of Robbie Williams.
If you there was an actual actor. It was motion capture.
There was an actual actor, yes. Okay. So for some of the scenes, you've got CGI, but for most of it, the filmmakers here are working with the same company who worked on the Lord of the Rings films, and also with the Planet of the Apes saga.
If you to keep interrupting and you're going to get to the end of that point if you told me. I know you are, but is it Robbie Williams' speaking voice?
Yeah, that's the interesting part. So it's John O'Davis' speaking voice when this film is a drama, let's say. And then whenever the musical segments enter, it's Robbie Williams singing. And I think he's actually re-recorded his songs again for this. And as well as that, you also have Robbie Williams narrating the whole thing. Because as I understand it, Michael Gracie interviewed him a couple of years ago, and the film was kind of formed and written by Michael Gracie and a couple of different screenwriters based on those interviews. So the whole thing was right. kind of crafted like a memoir that ended up just becoming a film. And at right. one stage, Michael Gracie had this idea to portray Robbie Williams not as a human, but as something else. And he went to Robbie and said, "How do you see yourself?" And it was based on the conversations that Robbie had where he said that he sees himself as less evolved and that he's always considered him maybe himself. You know, he knows that throughout parts of his career, there was an element of him being a chancer and an attention seeker that was a lot bigger than his talent. He is very talented, but at one point it was just, you know, he was the performing monkey. And as soon as you say something like that to a guy like Michael Gracie, who has a huge imagination, I mean, I said that I didn't love The Greatest Showman, but there's a lot going on in that film. As soon as they said that, they just couldn't put the lid back on it. So they said, right, okay, let's go with the chimp role. And I was just going to say earlier that when I first heard about this film, I thought, well, this
yes, let's
this
get is to, going the, to be the, a, the delayed clause. Point, yeah. If you had told me,
if you told me a year ago that this film might end up on a shortlist for even one Academy Award, I would have laughed you out of the room.
Yeah,
and that's exactly where we are with this. It's been an original song, Forbidden Road, has been nominated for Golden Globe for Best Original Song. And the shortlist came out there recently for the 15 songs that are now in contention for Best Original Song at the Academy Awards. Robbie Williams is in there. That is just nuts. And I'm also pleased to report, John, that the film is very, very good.
So I know we're going around the houses here slightly, but from what I've seen of the clips, it is a kind of standard enough biopic arc.
Yeah.
But we have the chimp playing him.
Yeah, I mean, every other film that you've seen about singers, you know, kind of experiencing hardships at the top, every kind of beat that has to be hit, every, you know, formulaic story point, it's all in there. But it's the way that it's presented, it's the way it's assembled that makes all the difference. And the energy running throughout this, I mean, it's just, it's carnivalesque at times. And I think that's what keeps it going. Like, you're never bored. And also, I should say, there are no banana gags in here. The chimp aspect, it actually enhances the story. It doesn't take away from it because it is a gimmick, but it's not a gimmick that pulls you away from the story.
Yeah.
None of the characters ever, they never address this. No one ever says that, you know, something or someone is out of place. It's just going back to that thing. This is how little Rob, as he called himself when he was younger, saw himself when he was a kid. So no one else thinks that he's a chimp. But basically, the starting point is that Rob was kind of useless at everything when he was a kid. But the one thing that he loved to do was sing. And he loved nothing better than to sing with his dad in front of the telly. And his dad, played brilliantly by Steve Pemberton, he has delusions of grandeur. He fancies himself as this crooner, and he's always talking about whenever he makes it. And one day he just disappears without warning from Rob's life. And Rob can't get over that. And he can't get over one of the last conversations that he had with his dad, where his dad said, "You're either a somebody in this life or you're a nobody." So he says to his grandmother, played by the wonderful Alison Steadman, it really just is a terrific performance by Alison Steadman. He says to her, "You know, I want to be somebody. I want to do something." And although she tells him that he's enough, he's never going to believe that. And you know yourself, even if you're just a casual fan of Robbie Williams, you know that he always has had that problem, you know, that hole that can't be filled. So then Gracie just takes us through the whole thing up until around like Rob's maybe like late 20s, early 30s, the wild take that years, the attempts at the solo career, the fractious relationship with Nicole Appleton. That was actually, that last bit is my favorite section of the film, because you think going into this, you hope going into this, that you're not going to get another Bohemian Rhapsody. You know, you don't want the film that's just going to, you know, just be this, "Oh, isn't Robbie Williams great? Let's just show how great he is." You're not getting that with this. Robbie Williams, by his own admission in his 20s, was an idiot.
Yeah.
And very selfish and very foolish. And it shows him to be all of those things. It's such an honest approach to the rock biopic. Very much in line, John, with Dexter Fletcher's Rocketman, the Elton John biopic, more so than, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, no, indeed. And there's a lot of other ones on the profit and loss side of that, on the loss side, unfortunately. But look, let's stay on the side of the angels. Does it go, because you said it's very honest, warts and all, does it go up to his kind of redemption with his current, latest, hopefully last wife and the kind of reasonable contentment he's found? No.
No, and I don't think we're spoiling that. And I'm actually glad that it didn't. Again, it's almost as though the film, this doesn't, and not to make it sound derivative at all, because I don't think it is, but it is very much in line, like the same way Rocket Man had those surreal and inventive flourishes and twists.
Yeah.
That's the kind of film that we're getting here. You know, one minute we're going to have this straight drama, but John, you know, it's a film with a chimpanzee at the center of it. So it goes a little bit wild. It turns into a circus. There's a wonderful sequence in London where you've got just the entire city participating in this rock DJ musical segment with them. And it was just honestly one of the best times I had at the cinema this year. It's so well put together. But like all the best biopics, whether it's from Rocketman to Walk the Line, this is not Cradle to the Grave stuff. This is not, you know, Robbie Williams obviously is still very much with us. But what I mean by that is we're not, you know, the way Rocketman finished, I think, around Elton John's early 30s. That's kind of, we're just getting a snippet. You could, if you wanted to, do a Better Man part two, but there's no need to cover everything. I thought this was just a wonderful film, so well performed, full of ideas that it really does deliver on. The drama is meaty and emotional. The chimpanzee elements, ironically, kind of made me care more for the character than I might have if they'd gone the straight route. And I think on top of everything else, I've always been a fan of Robbie Williams' music, and I think his songs are just beautiful. You know, maybe not the latter albums, but for the first time ever, in this film, I really understood his lyrics, and a lot of effort has gone into syncing the songs with what's going on in the scene, not like what you see in Mamma Mia where it's all over the place. So you start to appreciate the music more. The songs, they actually fit with this setup. It really is a triumph.
It sounds like Chris Wasser has had an epiphany around Robbie Williams. I have to say, it sounds great. It sounds like it could have been a mess, and it sounds like a really inventive, creative biopic that I can't wait to see. So what are you going to say stars-wise for Better Man?
Not a mess at all. It's so capably handled. It's so entertaining, engaging, profoundly moving. I did cry a couple of times. I was not expecting this film at all. So as I said, an unexpected triumph, the full 5 stars for me.
Wow. Well, it's Christmas, folks, and he doesn't give them away easy. 5 stars for Better Man, the chimp-infused, if that's even the correct term, Robbie Williams biopic. Let's take a clip.
I know what you're thinking. What's with the monkey? I'm Robbie Williams. I'm one of the biggest pop stars in the world. But I've always seen myself a little less evolved.
You've got to risk it all, whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes.
For the next 2 hours, your ass is mine!
And I should say, that's a clip from Better Man, and I should say that's out on Stephen's Day, the 26th of December. St. Stephen's Day. I was corrected once on the radio for not saying that. It is St. Stephen's Day. Luckily, I didn't call it Boxing Day. But anyway, so that's a whopping 5 stars for Better Man. Chris, tell me quickly then, we have a movie on Amazon Prime that I really like the look of because I do like a lot of the main players. We have a stand-up comedian who's kind of not a great stand-up comedian and takes his son, who's neurodiverse, on a road trip against the wishes of Robert De Niro, his doorman father.
Yeah, it's a bit of an odd setup, but there's an awful lot of goodwill in
and
this
film.
It's called Standing Up. Yeah, it was called Ezra for American audiences, but it's going to be released here on digital platforms through Prime Video with a different title. So Bobby Cannavale, who is always worth a punt, he's playing this comedian who used to write for late night television, but now he's a stand-up. You know, he wants to be a huge stand-up, but he's kind of struggling. He's a good storyteller, but not a very funny one. Saying that, his muse and his good luck charm is his 11-year-old son, Ezra, played a lovely performance by William Fitzgerald. So Ezra is autistic, and he has all of these stories about him, but they're not funny stories. So he's still trying to figure out how he works, you know, that into his set. But at the same time, he should be kind of just focusing on being a father, because Ezra might need to attend a special needs school. And Max doesn't agree with this at all. His ex-wife, Jenna, played by Rose Byrne. Interesting fact, John, Rose Byrne and Bobby Cannavale are actually together in real life.
Okay.
They disagree on his educational needs. So very long story short, Max gets in a fist fight with a doctor. He disagrees with the medication that his son has put on. He disagrees with the school that he's gone to. And despite the fact that he has a restraining order against the family, he kidnaps his own son in the middle of the night and goes on a road trip with him.
Okay, okay. Well, you know, a less interesting or a less ordinary story,
yeah,
you might say. And Robert De Niro plays his sympathetic or not so sympathetic father.
Yeah, sympathetic. The sympathetic grandfather role and the always stressed out father to Bobby Cannavale. So he's the grandfather to Ezra. It is a lovely performance from Robert De Niro. I thought Scorsese was the only one getting decent performance out of De Niro at this point in his career, but he's doing some acting here. He's trying to right the wrongs of the past because, yeah, you know, he might not have been the best dad to Max, and he can see now that Max has kind of picked up an awful lot of his bad habits from him, particularly his rage. And I mentioned that twist there, I mentioned the kidnapping thing. It's a very unusual twist, and I think that the film struggles with it because this story is definitely coming from a good place. You know, Tony Goldwyn was able to kind of get some of his actor friends involved. Whoopi Goldberg, who doesn't really act all that often anymore, she's playing Max's agent. You've got Vera Farmiga in there too. Tony Goldwyn actually acts in this. Obviously, Tony and Whoopi acted in Ghost before. And it's all based on a screenplay by Tony Sporadicus, who, despite the fact that this story is not based on true events, it is inspired by his own life and you know, raising an autistic son with his ex-wife. So again, a lot of heart, a lot of charm. I just think it's a little bit bumpy. It's very lucky that it has that charming A-list cast to paper over the cracks.
Okay. So what would you say stars wise for Standing Up?
I think it's a lovely Sunday afternoon film. You know, it's full of holes, and again, you know, there are flaws, but I like everyone in it and I like what it's trying to do, and it gets good De Niro performance, so that's worth the 3 stars.
Okay, 3 stars. And I agree with you, Bobby Cannavale. There's just something about him, very watchable. So I will be watching this because I never watch movies, no, I'm joking. But I have a lot to catch up on over Christmas. Hopefully that will be one of them. It's on Amazon Prime or Prime Video, as they'd like us to refer to. From what date, Chris?
It's available now on Prime Video.
Available now. Well, Chris, thank you for that, and indeed your contributions all year long. All going to plan. We'll hear lots from you next year. Thanks a million.
Thanks for having me, John.
Chris Wasser there, talking about Standing Up on Prime Video and also Better Man, which is in cinemas from the 26th of December. Dates are starting to blur, my friends. One date I can tell you about, though, is the 25th of December, which is Christmas Day, because as is tradition on this radio station, I'll be bringing you a special Screen Time between 11 and 12, where I'll be playing some of my favourite Christmas movies and Christmas TV episodes and some music from those Christmas movies and Christmas TV episodes. So do tune in at 11 on Christmas Day if you fancy it. No hard sell here, it's Christmas Day, but it might be a nice accompaniment to you as you cook breakfast or have your first argument of the day. You know, you can throw me on in the background to guide you through that. So that is to come on Christmas Day. Thank you for listening this week. You can listen back to this show on the News Talk app, powered by Go Loud, or wherever you get your podcast. This show is on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. and will be, all going to plan, all throughout next year. Let me wish you a happy Christmas and have a safe run in to the big day. Going to leave you with some, it's seasonal music. I don't think it actually even mentions Christmas. This is called Winter Song by Sarah Bareilles and Ingrid Michaelson. It was featured in Scrubs. It was in Grey's Anatomy, Brothers and Sisters. A gorgeous seasonal song. So I will leave you with that and wish you a happy remainder to this pre-Christmas weekend.
Bum 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 bum.